Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
During a State of the Union speech, President Biden warned Republicans, saying they have no clue about the power of women. And on this point, the State of the Union rebuttal speech by Senator Katie Britt of Alabama might have inadvertently proven him right.
I'm worried about the future of our children, and this is why I've invited you into this strange, empty kitchen. Because Republicans wanted me to appeal to woman voters, and women love kitchen.
Okay, actually, this is Scarlett Johansson doing an impersonation of the senator in the SNL cold open over the weekend, lampooning Britt for, quote, auditioning for the part of scary mom. Now, on paper, the choice to have Britt probably seemed to make sense. The youngest woman in the Senate at a kitchen table where politicians believe families make economic decisions. But Britt is also from the state that has thrown IVF into peril in the abortion rights fight. And it's a reminder of how much of that fight is guiding both parties in their attempt to draw women voters. So helping us to figure all this out is Anna Marie Cox, journalist, podcaster, and author based in Austin, Texas. Welcome to The Assignment.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So this is a lot to unpack.
Oh, boy. Just, like, yeah. Adding Katie Britt to the mix.
Unexpected.
Means you're going to laugh.
It was a plot twist.
But it's still kind of scary.
Okay, so true or false, she was a good choice. Biden, oldest. Then you have an extremely young politician. You have a woman politician. And you have someone who's showing what the modern Republican woman is. She is an up-and-comer. And she also...
She is.
And we've heard her real voice before, those of us who have covered Congress, because she talks a lot. We actually had a clip of her normal speaking voice, which is what she used in her social media to advertise the fact she was going to give the rebuttal.
Hey, y'all, Katie Britt here. I am looking forward to delivering the Republican response to the State of the Union. So tune in. See you soon.
Perfectly fine.
It's so funny. Yeah. How many people clocked the theater kid energy?
She did. And the thing is, after Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, Marco Rubio of Florida, this has come to be seen as a pretty tough gig. And people seem to flop.
It's like being on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I mean, it's the Sports Illustrated cover curse. When you are picked from relative obscurity and given this kind of platform, and none of them have actually become the rising stars, right? Like, they're rising, but then they don't continue to rise. There was I can't remember who said it about Al Gore, that he's the old person's idea of a young person. That's definitely how the selection process seems to work for picking the person who gives the State of the Union rebuttal. It's like Mitch McConnell chooses them every time. And he thinks that he's got an idea of what, I don't know if he chooses them, by the way. I said that with authority, but I'm just imagining.
Like a true political writer.
Mitch McConnell chooses them. And he's doing it out of this theory of like, okay, this is what young voters want. But that's how disconnected they are from young voters, is they can't even in their imagination think about what would be appealing to young voters. And I follow right-wing media. That's part of my job. And I heard a bunch of young right-wingers, which do exist, not very many of them, they're all become famous, basically. You know, your Ben Shapiro's, your Charlie Kirk's, et cetera. There was some dissension among them about what this did and how it communicated. I heard a young woman, actually, it was one of the commenters on CNN, speak about how putting her at a kitchen table was kind of weird. That's what the GOP leaders imagine people to be doing. But it seemed stereotyping more than it did like relatable, especially since it looked like she was in an unfurnished model home.
Now, there is a Substack writer, a newsletter writer, Jess Piper. She writes something called The View from Rural Missouri. And she writes, quote, Senator Katie Britt was using her well-practiced, quote, fundy baby voice, the breathy cadence and soft childlike high pitch.
My name is Katie Britt, and I have the honor of serving the people of the great state of Alabama and the United States Senate. However, that's not the job that matters most. I am a proud wife and mom of two school-aged kids. My daughter, Bennett.
She is so many of the pastors' wives and Sunday school teachers I knew growing up in the evangelical church. Be sweet, obey. So this is the one of many. We'll get to another. Threads that have come out of this performance, fundy meaning fundamentalist, and a lot of ex-fundamentalists, I don't know how to say this, but young Christian women and writers have come out to say, we recognize the performance this woman was giving, and it's supposed to identify with a certain kind of woman who is going to appreciate it, and a certain kind of man who's going to appreciate seeing her like this.
I think that's a little more on the nose. That it's a certain kind of man that appreciates it. And because what those women are doing that make this performance in their real lives are doing it for the power. I don't think that they're powerless, but they're making choices to appeal to the people who have real power in those communities.
Right, because her voice doesn't really sound like this. She was class president at a major university. She obviously became senator of a statewide office, and she used to be a legislative aide. I believe it might have been to Richard Shelby in Alabama, who's a very powerful senator at the time, especially in the financial sector. So she's no slouch. But what we heard and saw was someone who looked like they might have never left that kitchen, which is the opposite of her actual life experience.
Right. And I think we should draw a distinction here between appealing to what is a broader GOP voter and a very narrow slice of the GOP electorate. But they're the people who vote in primaries, and they're the people who provide the energy and power that gets the GOP going at this rate. I mean, the GOP is not a majority party. And if you look at the specific policies in specific states, I think Alabama is the only state where a majority of voters are anti-choice. I think almost every other, there are five states in the union.
And you're referring to abortion rights, where specific, and we've seen this in all of the special elections and ballot votes that have happened in the last 2 years or so since the Dobbs ruling, which ended Roe v. Wade. So we have seen voters in red and blue states, when given the choice, choose to protect abortion rights.
Yeah, it is incredibly popular. It is, I mean, it's hard to overstate. Like, Americans believe in women being able to access reproductive care. They just do.
Or they don't want it taken away at random.
They don't want to take
it away. I think the taking away has always been the catalyst for the pushback.
That is true. That's another way to frame it. I think in some ways people are becoming more radicalized about it in seeing the playbook that's been followed by the GOP, which, by the way, ends in taking away IVF. Like, that is the natural, logical endpoint of when you determine on a legal level that an embryo is a person, right? What she was doing, I believe she had some talk in there about protecting IVF, and I've heard the extreme pro-life view about how you do that, but most people understand that that is a fig leaf, right? I mean, you can technically do an IVF procedure that won't destroy embryos. But I'm sure you know, like, in order to have a successful embryo transplantation or to get the best odds, you're going to have more than one embryo fertilized. It doesn't make financial sense to do it any other way. So you can say, oh, we're actually for this, but it won't actually happen. It's sort of like when they say exceptions for rape and incest. You can say that that's what you have in your policy, but in a practical way, those carve-outs don't actually make a difference on the ground.
And obviously, when the Alabama Supreme Court made this ruling saying that embryos, fertilized embryos, are what they called extrauterine children, right? Which is the term.
I love that phrase. Aren't we all extrauterine children?
The term they came up with. You know, this is obviously one of the most commonly used fertility treatments. It seemed as though Republicans in general started to scramble the jets, so to speak, to figure out how to counter what happened, to the point where James Lankford, a Republican, was talking about adopting embryos on CNN's State of the Union yesterday. Mike Pence, famously, his family talked about using it. And the talking points that came out of the, like, fundraising arm of the Senate was like, here's what we say. We support IVF. What do you make of this scramble?
It's so amazing to me that it caught them flat-footed, because this has been the goal of the far-right pro-life movement, of the extreme pro-life movement, for decades. Like, absolutely decades. And it speaks to the disconnect between the, you know, nationally visible Republicans and the people who are doing the work on the ground, the people who are making these laws locally. There, you know, there are, we have sanctuary cities in some states, and some cities in Texas are declaring themselves like pro-life cities. And these are the people that run for school boards. These are the people that actually start these policies that impact people on an everyday level. And eventually they're going to filter up.
Right.
Eventually.
Meaning there was no way to avoid life starts at conception logistically if everyone who's an activist on the ground is fighting for that.
That's right. And I think on some level, mainstream national Republicans were caught by surprise that this all worked out. And then that just speaks to their own myopia on their careers and what happens at national policy, right? A few of them, I think, have their fingers on the pulse, but perhaps they underestimated the degree to which their voter suppression tactics work. Somebody like Ron DeSantis is a good example. He, as you may recall, barely won the governorship, right? And he then instituted these extreme conservative policies, including really going after voting rights. He had a squad, like a goon squad of people doing like on-camera arrests of people who had violated some minor part of voter registration or voting, including some people that had been formerly incarcerated, because Florida had a statewide referendum on allowing formerly incarcerated people to vote, and it passed. And then the Republican leadership in Florida did everything they could to claw that back. And of course, Ron DeSantis wound up winning a fairly significant victory, but it wasn't on the basis of the popularity of his policies. It was based on his success in, you know, keeping Democrats from voting.
I'm talking with Anna Marie Cox, journalist and author. We'll be right back.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Apollo, the god of music, was also the god of medicine, right? So there's been a long time link between music and sound and health.
That is my favorite fact of the month. Apollo, the god of music, was also the god of medicine. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's explore the world we're living in every weekday with On Point from WBUR, Boston's NPR. Find and follow On Point wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. We're talking with Anna Marie Cox about abortion rights on the ballot and how this is shaking up the politics of the moment. So what do you see that Democrats are doing when it comes to trying to appeal to women? And is it really working any better? Because it does seem to be a series of threats and scary scenarios, right? Even more so than our Handmaid's Tale era of like showing those images on TV. it really seems to be saying they, capital T-H-E-Y, are going to take something away from you. So you have to turn out, no matter what you think of your Democratic nominee.
It's worked so far. And I think that those who believe in access to reproductive care will, under these threats, fear is a powerful motivator. Political scientists will tell you that they will turn out. I think that's true. I think that it doesn't lead to a good long-term strategy for the party. And I think it ignores the systemic issues and the, I'll use the word, intersectionality of what abortion and reproductive rights mean.
Okay, so give us more detail there.
Reproductive rights are part of a suite of rights that we all need in order to fully express ourselves politically, in order to be fully counted as a citizen. If you shut down access to reproductive care, the people that are affected the most are poor people and people of color and people who don't have the bandwidth in their lives to figure out how to access that care, right? Katie Cox, the woman who sued the state of Texas in order to try and get an abortion, she is somewhat representative. This is going to happen to white women. I have a friend who had to leave the state in the fall in order to obtain an abortion.
And we should say you're talking to us from Texas.
I'm talking to you from Texas. And I think if I went around and asked my friends, probably most of them would know someone that had to do something that we didn't used to have to do to access reproductive care. I myself have ordered abortion pills from overseas, and I just have them in my medicine cabinet. Not because I particularly think I'm going to need them, but, you know, if I do need them, I want them there. However, the people that we don't hear about are the people that are the most affected. I did a story on religious leaders that are helping women to access reproductive care. And the demographic of the women that show up to take a bus or fly to New Mexico, those aren't white women. That's not Katie Cox. And the thing is that those women aren't going to be able to be activists, aren't going to be able to lend their support and their power, and probably not going to be able to vote, right? Like, their voices won't be heard on a larger scale. And I think that when we look at reproductive care, we need to think about more than just, like, getting your lady parts attended to.
Right. Which is very, I think, I have seen a shift in the way Democrats talk about this, in part because they've done some smart polling and figured out that if you call it reproductive freedom instead of being pro-choice, people respond to the idea of freedom and freedom taken away.
I think it needs to be connected to childcare. I think it needs to be connected to voter access. I think it needs to be connected to universal basic income. It needs to be connected to getting these people to a place where they can vote.
Now, you're speaking as someone who no longer identifies as a Democrat. So I should just say you are in a way that progressive sounding voter that Biden might be having problems with, though.
Oh, I'm going to. I mean.
Oh, you're going to come home? This is their theory of the case.
I mean, given the choices.
But my point is just that if you this idea that there is a suite of issues that progressives care about, that they're also tied to this issue is important. Because there's a Democrat out there who thinks that the abortion part will be so important that women will jettison those others to ensure its protection.
Yeah. On some level, I guess I'm a single issue voter because, like, if that wasn't something that the Democrats were protecting, then it'd be hard for me to, like, gather the enthusiasm. But I think we need to think of reproductive care as something we're fighting for as part of these other pieces of access to healthcare in general, for instance. Access to the polls, period. In Texas, they've shut down a bunch of polling centers and they've really limited early voting, which is the one way to get working people not to vote. This is what I would say to scare people, is the Republicans do not plan on governing as a majority party. They do not plan on winning the popular vote. They are going to be able, if they structure things the way that they wish, they're going to be able to enact incredibly unpopular policies because they simply run things.
Meaning they'll win the Electoral College, they'll maintain the Senate.
Even thin majorities in the Senate, but they're not going to represent a majority of the American
people.
You
wrote that in the New Republic that they're not concerned about overreach and backlash because they're not concerned about instituting policies that have popular support. So what do you mean by that?
I mean, they don't need it. Again, reproductive choice, access to abortion, however you want to frame it, is incredibly popular. They aren't changing their positions. They are not changing their positions on this in response to popular demand. They are changing their talking points, but they are not speaking back to the extremists on the right at all. They're not saying you no longer control this party. We are going to make a broad-based appeal to old-fashioned Republican values, let's say. Now, and we can quibble about those values and whether or not those are popular or those are representative, but there are lots of people that like talk about low taxes, right? That like talk about federalism, about being a local government or whatever. Those are the people that have been alienated. And those are the people, I mean, Democrats can win elections by appealing to moderate voters, for sure. But I wish Democrats would take this moment to try and talk again more broadly about how these rights are connected with each other. And I think build a bigger, stronger coalition. Bernie Sanders talked about this stuff, right? And Bernie Sanders had a message that appealed to voters. Like, I think that there is a strain of voter, and it's not just far left, that wants to hear how to make our society different. Like how to not just sort of go around the edges, which I believe is what Democrats often talk about, you know, is like tweaking things and instead talk about like, let's see if we can imagine something different.
We've been talking a lot here about the broader politics of this, not just the presumptive nominees. So what are you going to be listening for over the next couple of months in terms of appeal? Appeal to this mythical women's voter. It was not the person that Katie Britt portrayed, right? Or else it wouldn't have become this mainstream joke on SNL. It's not the person who wore the pussy hat a few years ago, right? So who is this person they're trying to appeal to? And what are we going to see in the way of those appeals?
Oh, Audie, I don't think things are going to change very much. I think the Democratic call has been to restore Roe, and that's going to work. That is the limit to the imagination of a lot of mainstream Democratic voters, is we want Roe back, and that's fine. And actually—
So just codify or protect the right to an abortion.
Codify or protect Roe, yes. There's been reporting, people who have talked to even some of the more, I'm not going to call them like radical reproductive freedom groups, but groups that if they had their druthers might put things a little differently. They realize the choices are what they are. And they are willing to not do what I'm doing and ask for a little more radical language, which, by the way, it's radical only since it hasn't been said before. I don't think the positions that I'm talking about are outside the imagination of voters who care about this stuff.
Especially as every time something happens, like Alabama, it brings to life imagined scenarios, right? So in this case, it was IVF. Another case we could foresee could potentially be around contraception. And those things become real to people when they have to be implemented, enforced.
And the language and the philosophy and the logic of pro-life, anti-choice, however, anti-abortion, however you want to put it, that logic becomes more obvious. Whereas they were able to cloak that a lot.
Right. That's a good point, because with IVF in particular, this idea of what that fertilized embryo is gets at the very heart of when does life begin, their longest running argument. Only now you have to put it to people for real in a press release. And, and they don't want to do it.
And I think also what becomes clear is the futility of these carve-outs that they make, right? Where they want to make their policies sound softer. And they do carve-outs for incest. They do carve-outs for supposedly the life of the woman.
So it's a ban except for. It's a ban except for.
Right. And Americans are like, oh, well, if there's exceptions, then there are exceptions. And I don't have to feel like a bad person voting for this Republican. I like their economic policies. I think that's been the logic of a lot of Republican voters, has been, well, I'm pro-life. I don't like abortion used as birth control. And look, this person is pro-life. This Republican is pro-life, but they have exceptions for these various
things.
Or
the Nikki Haley, I don't want to make the decision for someone else, even though I myself do not believe in abortion.
And they hear the economic policies, they hear the school policies, they hear whatever, and they're like, okay, I feel like my beliefs jibe with this person. I can feel good about voting for them. That is how Republicans have gotten the power that they do, by kind of like allowing people who, again, we know vast majority of Americans are for access to abortion, they're able to like put that to the side, right? Now we are seeing the results of that philosophy, and we're seeing how those exceptions are meaningless when it comes to real life, when a doctor is faced with having to make a call on it. I think with rape, you have to have reported it, and the same with incest. And how often is that going to happen, right? So it's becoming obvious, I think, to so-called moderate voters that if a Republican says they're pro-life, what that means is people are going to be hurt. What that means is there's going to be an 11-year-old girl that has to travel out of state in order to take care of a pregnancy that was caused by incest or rape. So I'm hoping that just seeing that logic will not just get people to vote for someone who is for protecting access, but also see how these policies betray a world view that is incompatible with what I think of as American rights and American freedom and American civil liberties.
Well, Anna Marie Cox, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and share your reporting, The View from Texas, helping us to understand this moment. We appreciate it.
Anytime, Adi, anytime.
Anna Marie Cox is a writer. You can read some of her work at The New Republic and CNN.com, among other places. We'll have a link to her website in our show notes. The Assignment is a production of CNN Audio. This episode was produced by Dan Bloom. Our senior producer is Matt Martinez. Dan DeZula is our technical director, and Steve Lichtai is the executive producer of CNN Audio. We got support from Haley Thomas, Alex Manisseri, Robert Mathers, John Dianora, Lenny Steinhardt, James Andrus, Nicole Pesaru, and Lisa Namorow. Thanks as always to Katie Hinman. I'm Audie Cornish. Thank you for listening.
Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.